welcome to another episode of Superheroes and Sci-Fi Musings with Adam and Ryan. I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. Just glad that it's the weekend. Long week at work, and the temperature actually seems to be rising. So snow is melting. I'm happy.
All good signs.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's warming up a little bit here, and I say a little bit is the key word, but
yeah, it's still nippy, but
something is better than nothing, right?
I will gladly take like 40 or 50 degree weather at this point.
Yeah. It's been good heading into the weekend. There's a new superhero movie for us to enjoy.
And superhero opening weekends, no matter what studio and company and character, are always exciting.
And you and I have already enjoyed this particular movie.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Marvel.
I've already seen it once, and I will be seeing it again tomorrow.
And what the plan is, folks, this week is not our Captain Marvel review. That will be next week. Because if the stars align and scheduling permits, then my co-host from Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast, Travis Hines, will join us for this Marvel review. And so it'll be our first Marvel review on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So we're finally getting around to that idea that we planned.
And you know what? In my biased opinion, this is a pretty damn good movie to start off the Marvel movie reviews.
Yeah. So that, look forward to that next week. So you have a lot of time in between to still check out Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. So that when we do review it, you can't yell at us about spoilers because there will be spoilers in next week's episode. So if you haven't done so, watch the movie.
And then, go see this movie.
And then we'll talk about it next week.
Mm-hmm. I look forward to it.
But this week we have some news and another round of Roswell and Project Blue Book reviews to do. But before we do that, did you do any non-DC reading this week?
I mean, if I want to be technical, no. But I'm responding.
Did you do any reading this week?
Yes, I did.
Okay. What did you do?
I went back to the bins a couple years back, and I picked out Grant Morrison's New 52 Action Comics run, his issue zero.
Okay.
From when DC did that whole, zero issue month with all their titles, Origins and Untold Stories and all that. And this is one that I hadn't read in a long time. It almost felt like I was kind of revisiting it for the first time because, a lot of stories and stuff have happened in the world of DC since then. I thought it was, a very cute story about, young Clark before he's even Superman, but he's, running around in the jeans and the blue shirt and the red cape, not even with his proper outfit yet. And he's trying to foil a kidnapping, it seems. Gets blasted by a rocket and falls into an alleyway, and a young boy comes across an unconscious Clark and takes the cape. And I felt that it was a very sweet and emotional story, digging into this boy's clearly troubled and abusive home life. And, with this indestructible Kryptonian cape, he now feels like he himself is invincible, and all he wants to do is protect his younger brother from harm.
I remember this issue.
Yeah, it was. It's very good. It's very sweet, and I love how it ends with, Clark, because he's technically not Superman yet, being like, telling the boy, thank you for holding on to it for me. Your bully will never hurt you again. That kind of stuff is just. And people thought that the new 52 Superman, had no heart and that he was only just punchy, punchy, punchy. No good stories. This one single issue is proof to the contrary.
Well, good. I'm glad you went back and relived that and enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
While you once again played the rebel and, went against the grain of this show, I will stick to the plan and recommend a current comic book, not published by DC, but published by Marvel. And it's Conan the Barbarian, number 4. First of all,
Is this Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan or Jason Momoa Conan?
I'm just going to say it's Conan. And not O'Brien. I'm talking about the sword, wielding.
Well, now I want to see that in comic book form. Conan O'Brien as Conan the Barbarian. I want to see that.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, does he still have a show? I don't even know.
Oh, yes. That show is never going to end, and I love it.
Maybe he'll. Well, now that you said it's never going to end, tomorrow they're going to announce that next season will be the last. But you can start a Netflix campaign to revive it. What I like about this series and this issue is that the series takes us through Conan's, different stages of Conan's life. Mm-hmm. So we see younger Conan coming up through the ranks and being the conqueror and this warrior, and then we see King Conan and older, and I don't know if he's wiser, but he's older. And I mean, artistically, it looks like the beauty of this series is that you see. I describe the art as, Arnold Schwarzenegger circa 1982, first Conan or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger now in the Conan wardrobe as King Conan. That day, so you get that vibe from it. But I like the fact that it takes, it covers the gamut of all the years through his life, and it seems to be jumping back and forth. And it's written by Jason Aaron, who's had some good runs at Marvel. He's had a run on Thor.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a
very impressive run on Thor. I know that my dad collected the entirety of the Jane Foster Thor run, absolutely. Oh, my dad absolutely loved it, actually.
Here's what you can do for next week. Have him give you a summary of the run, and you can recommend that next week.
You see, the only reason, folks, that I do DC is because I'm not on the main DC show, so that's where I have to sneak it in.
Well, what you should do is let it all build up until you're on the main show, and then let it all out in the big run.
Okay, and this week I read this issue, and then this week I read this issue.
You can cover 4 weeks. Pick 4 comic books. Because you're on once a month, so pick 4 comic books and just say, I recommend this, 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 and this, and here's why.
Oh my goodness.
See, that's kind of having your
but my appearances on the main show are only when we're doing the big graphic novels. I don't even get a chance to.
Well, we'll make amendments. Stop being difficult. Borrow your dad's comics and read the damn run for next week. The whole thing.
Being difficult. Boy, don't.
All right, so yeah, Conan.
Okay, so go on, Conan. Conan.
My recommendation, because starting in May, Conan is somehow joining the MC. I was gonna say MCU.
I haven't heard this news.
The MU, whatever the Earth 616, whatever they're calling the comic universe now.
Uh-huh.
comic universe proper, and he's going to be part of an Avengers team titled the Savage Avengers, with the likes of Wolverine, Venom, Conan, all these violent, bent, quote unquote Avengers. So, but to get started on that, you might want to give this Conan series a try. I think it's really good. The art is solid, and Jason Aaron's writing is top notch. So that's my recommendation. Since I'm allowing you to be, to have reckless abandon, and not follow the script of the show, you wanted to talk about some DC news that dropped recently.
Just very quickly.
What is it exactly that you have to get off your chest? Let's hear.
Oh my God, I'm detecting a lot of sass up north.
No sass. I'm just talking.
I'm not
gonna say it because I'm gonna be talking about it on another show. So I'm letting you.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Excuse me, I gotta get to the front of the line here.
Okay. Although I don't have a baton, I mean, I can pass you. I look for something in my house to pass you.
I'll hand you one of Barbara Gordon's Escrima sticks or something.
I'll tell you what, I have a Groot, in a jar, you know, from the movie. I'll hand you that because technically it's a twig, it's a stick. So there you go. I'll speak.
Okay.
To quote Jor-El on Superman Returns, that $3 billion sequence. Speak.
I'm abused and unloved. Okay. Quick thought on Arrow coming to an end after eight seasons. Well, it'll end after its upcoming eighth season. I'm bummed. I knew this was going to happen. I knew that Stephen Amell would not be wanting to don the green hood and, you know, shoot arrows for the rest of his life. And, you know, it is so bizarre to me to think that, you know, 8 years ago when this show was first announced that we would have, you know, what we collectively call the Arrowverse, Supergirl, Flash, Legends. I kind of call it the Arrow multiverse because, you know, I'm sure with Crisis on Infinite Earths happening later this year, we'll get Black Lightning integrated into the main universe, because I think that's what one of the points of Crisis is going to be, to try and get everyone into just one plane of existence in a way. I'm gonna miss Amal. I hope that they can find some ways to keep some of these characters around, you know, not saying to migrate them all to different shows, but, you know, bare minimum, you know, future seasonal crossovers. Sure. It'd be cool to see, you know, Dinah come back, you know, Black Canary come back and all that stuff. So it's been a hell of a run. I can't wait to see how this season ends. And it's gonna, that, you know, 10th and final episode of season 8 is gonna be very, very emotional, I think. A lot of people are going to be shedding a lot of tears when Crisis comes around later this year.
Very well said.
Thank you. On the movie front, the probably one of the biggest pieces of news is we all knew that, you know, for a couple weeks that Will Smith wasn't going to be coming back as Deadshot in the James Gunn written and probably directed sequel, soft reboot, soft relaunch, whatever you want to call it, of Suicide Squad. But it looks like Warner Brothers has gotten Idris Elba to replace him. And I ain't going to say that this is an upgrade, because Will Smith was fantastic as Floyd Lawton. I will say, however, that Will Smith is, you know, whatever character he plays, for the most part, is pretty much Will Smith just wearing that character's clothing.
Yeah.
But if you were going to replace Will Smith with anybody and keep the character of Deadshot around, God damn, you couldn't have picked anyone more perfect than Idris.
Yeah, I mean, well, I could tell everybody what I think, but then they wouldn't listen to that. The Tales from the DC Multiverse. So if you want to hear my thoughts on both of these subjects, you'll have to tune into the other show. How about that? But
yeah, the other show that I'm not on.
Well, you're on
frequently.
Listen, you're working your way.
I'm slowly wiggling.
Now promotions don't just happen overnight. What do you think this is?
A charity.
Getting fired happens really quickly, but not the promotion.
I mean, I don't want to get fired, and I don't want to also, you know, send you a DM saying that I'm all finished with the podcasting and block you and all my friends.
Good thoughts by Ryan. It's always good to get his mm-hmm. take on things and
my quick rapid fire. Yeah,
and I'm sure he'll upset other people, and they'll be bickering at him on Twitter.
Twitter's been rather kind to me.
He looks forward to that. So if you want to yell at him, we'll give you his handle after the show.
Exactly.
But I'll share my thoughts on the other podcast. But good thoughts from Ryan on these important subjects.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But now to non-DC news. Let's talk about Marvel's The Eternals. We know that is one of their... nothing's been officially confirmed because mm-hmm. they're waiting until Endgame because they don't want to ruin everything, you know, any surprises. But conventional wisdom says that The Eternals is going to be one of their 2020 releases. And recently, Kevin Feige talked to Collider about the Eternals, and he referenced the fact that one of Jack Kirby's run. First of all, he said that it was going to be an ensemble. Mm-hmm. He said that each of the characters in Eternals could span their own film, but they've decided to take the group concept like Guardians of the Galaxy instead and mm-hmm. to bring these characters to life. So it's going to be an ensemble. And he said what they're going to do is they're going to take cues from a run that Jack Kirby, you know, the late great Jack Kirby did, where the Eternals spanned 1,000 years, or thousands of years, I should say, and basically it's going to intersect with, you know, various points of history for the MCU. That's something that I don't think in any superhero film we've seen, to my recollection.
Nothing that I can even remotely think of now.
So that's a cool concept. And truth be told, I have to read Eternals because it's something I'm not familiar with.
Likewise me either. I didn't even know about any of these characters or their backgrounds or anything until, you know, the rumors started to pop up about this being one of their next big movies of the MCU.
Well, make no mistake, I will be investigating and reading some.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll convince Ryan to do the same.
True.
Now, I heard that. If he's not trying to co-op the podcast here and do DC reviews on a non-DC show. But anyway.
This is super on sci-fi. We're allowed to talk DC.
you keep telling yourself that.
Then we should have called this Marvel and sci-fi.
Doesn't have the same ring to it, all right? but yeah, so it's going to span, you know, thousands of years, and I think that's cool. The other piece of news is that during the press for Captain Marvel, Kevin Feige and some of the other producers at Marvel Studios have been saying that the Eternals, or there will be an upcoming film that is widely known, you know, thought of to be the Eternals, that will feature the first openly gay superhero on screen for the MCU. Let me make that clear. And the prevailing thought behind which character it's going to be from the Eternals is Hercules. What are your thoughts on all that, Ryan?
Well, as the resident gay man.
Well, I never called you that. You said that, so we'll just go.
There was a college class where I was the only openly gay person in the class, and any time that LGBT issues came up, the teacher kind of did turn to me and go, "Ryan, thoughts?"
Okay, so
it's like
if a professor can do it, so can I. All right, good. I mean, it's good because now, like, you know, Stephen has the international correspondent.
International correspondent. I'm
and you're the resident gay man. Yeah, you're the resident gay man. It's good. everybody's got a title. Wait till next week's intro. It's gonna be fantastic.
You know, it's like on one hand, I'm not happy that it's taken this long for any LGBT character to show up. I mean, we kind of already, in a way, have had a major LGBT character pop up, but they cut Valkyrie's scenes from Thor Ragnarok out. So if we're going by, you know, theatrical cut, then no, we still haven't, even though there was intention there. So it's like, yeah, I'm, you know, on one hand, I'm not even saying, you know, a major character leading their own film or being the lead in an ensemble movie, just some kind of major or supporting character that might pop up in other movies. It shouldn't have taken this long, you know, 10 plus years and what, 20, 25 movies by the point Eternals comes out.
Agreed.
On the other hand, I am very happy that they're finally open and ready, you know, to do this, that they're finally being, you know, open and honest that they would like to have a character like this. And as we've seen with, you know, Black Panther and Wonder Woman, and now this weekend with Captain Marvel, you know, representation does matter. I don't need to be, you know, a Black person to, you know, enjoy Black Panther. I don't need to be a woman to enjoy Captain Marvel or Wonder Woman. I enjoy all these characters regardless of their characters' backstories, their personalities, their identities, whatever. But representation does matter. It is, I understand why it means so much to people to see themselves portrayed up on the screen. You know, for little girls to look at Captain Marvel or Wonder Woman and see them up on screen. For, you know, young Black boys and girls to see, you know, T'Challa up on screen. You know, and I've been waiting my whole life to see, yeah, if it is this character Hercules, this is going to be an ensemble film. This, you know, it's not going to be a solo movie, so he's not going to be the only main character in it. But if they're going to make him the lead, and if they're actually if they are going to have him be gay or bisexual or however they choose to go about it, it will mean something to me to see, you know. I kind of hate saying it this way, but it's the only way that I can think of off the top of my head at this moment. But to see
my people and my community be represented in a $150, $200 million big budget comic book superhero movie. Representation does matter. Black women, gay, you know, it's about time, and I've been waiting for something like this.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed on all counts. And just the idea of having Hercules is cool in and of itself. Again, I don't know much about the character, my bad, but I wonder if he's similar to the actual Hercules of, you know, myth.
I know nothing about the Eternals other than they're cosmic and they live as long as the Asgardians.
We should have done a search on Hercules. But anyway.
Oh, I'm sure. But I'm sure after this movie's announced and by the time it comes out, Marvel's going to go back into their history and bring out trades for the Eternals because they do that with every movie.
And they'll probably launch a new Eternals book as well.
So. Yes.
So we'll get caught up on all this stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If he's anything like the Hercules of myth, I'm down for it. I'm a sucker for Hercules. I agree with you. Representation is very important, and you know it's high time. Regarding the Valkyrie, you know, thing that she was supposed to, but then was cut. I have one thing to say. Hashtag release the Valkyrie cut.
Release the Valkyrie cut.
Why not? Hey, more Tessa Thompson is good for me.
Oh my God, she is wonderful, and I hope that they bring Valkyrie back.
Yeah. So, sticking with Marvel, as we just mentioned a few minutes ago, Captain Marvel is currently in theaters. And it had, you know, as they do nowadays with superhero films, it had a Thursday evening opening preview night. And Captain Marvel's posted some impressive numbers. She's basically... And I'm by the website I'm getting this from is which one is it? Hold on here. Superhero News. if anybody wants to know where I'm getting it, it's from that website. But Captain Marvel has posted the, let's see, fifth best opening night in Marvel Studios history with 20.7, so not 27, but 20.7 million dollars on Thursday night previews. So that puts Captain Marvel behind only Infinity War, Age of Ultron, Black Panther, and Civil War. That's good company to be in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all the MCU movies, even the weaker ones, are good company to be in. But for Thursday night, you know, preview night only, that's very good company to be in.
And the you know, the based on these numbers, the weekend projection is 155 to 160 million. Now, of course, depending on what happens, it could fluctuate up or down. But mm-hmm. we'll keep you updated next week in our actual Captain Marvel review mm-hmm. with, you know, stats from this opening weekend and what we have to that point mm-hmm. When we record. So, but definitely a great start. And I'm happy about this because I think, having seen the film deserves, you know, the eyeballs and the money it's getting. But also, this result shuts up those fools.
I'm glad you said it, not me.
Who were trolling who were trolling the film by posting reviews in the Rotten Tomatoes user reviews before the film even came out.
Yeah.
And now because Rotten Tomatoes put a stop to that, they're kind of now
accusing Rotten Tomatoes of...
They've gone to IMDb and they're tagging that user, you know, a review section. And it's just like, you know what? Can we stop the stupidity?
No, because there are going to be sad, pathetic people who think this. You know, some people are doing it because Brie Larson wanted more women and people of color in the press pool, and how dare she?
There's this narrative that she hates, this ridiculous narrative that she hates white men, and I'm like...
And that white men were not going to be welcome at the movie.
That's not what she said at all.
I've seen that bullshit going on for months, you know, on Twitter, and I'm seeing that pop up because, sadly, mutuals of mine, you know, like and retweet that crap. But yeah, when I went last night to see it, I saw a lot of white people.
Shocking.
I know.
I'm surprised they didn't have security bar them from the building.
I'm surprised I wasn't thrown out because I'm a pasty white boy myself.
Yeah. But, I'm convinced people don't know how to read because it's not exactly what she said.
No, they were just looking at, you know, these, you know, trolls and Comicsgate and alt-right folks were just looking at any reason to hate on this movie, whether or not it was simply because it's a Marvel movie and how dare Marvel movies feature women and have fun and be colorful. And all that crap, and you know, Brie Larson's comments, and it's just.
And now I've seen some more stupid things about how she doesn't like her fans or she feels uncomfortable around fans. Yet I saw from the premiere her signing autographs for kids dressed up as Captain Marvel. So, where is this narrative? Where is this garbage coming from? Do these people have nothing better to do? Seriously, yeah. I'm going to say something. Look, if people legitimately didn't like the movie for legitimate reasons.
Yes. You know, if you have problems with the story. There are, and you know, I'm willing to admit that there are probably a couple of twists / reveals that may not go over well for purists.
Right, but what I'm saying is if you have legitimate claims based on, you know, story, action sequences, CGI, and it has nothing to do with this BS, then fine, I'll hear you out and we can have a logical discussion and say, hey, we agree to disagree, we saw the same movie, but we took it two different ways. That's the beauty of opinion, we all have one, and if we don't see the thing the same way. But if you're just going to promote this propaganda BS... I have a suggestion for you. I have some, you know, rules or guidelines to help you. One, go outside, get some fresh air.
First of all, go outside.
Yeah. Two, get a job, because clearly you have too much time on your hands. Three, find a man or a woman, a real one, and get laid. That may help you.
My own personal fourth is rethink life priorities.
Yeah, and my fourth one is when all that fails, seek professional help. I'm so glad that it started well, and I think it's going to continue well, because I think the film deserves it. The Marvel brand is established and has built up that goodwill with the audience, and good for them on doing that. And also, I like when it bothers the troll and the basement dwelling segment.
Yep.
That's my. I mean, I don't live for it because I got better things to do. But whenever I hear some of this stuff in the periphery, it makes me smile.
I do get a weird, sadistic, sick pleasure out of seeing, you know, those kinds of people having. You know, they're having it, the success of something that they wanted to hate on so much, just shoved in their face, being proved that they're wrong.
So, good on Captain Marvel, and we'll keep track of the box office. and give you the update next week when we record our our Captain Marvel review. The final piece of news has nothing to do with Marvel, unless something happened in the last 48 hours where the rights for Star Trek went from CBS to Disney, which they haven't. But,
well, did Marvel ever do Star Trek comics? Or?
Probably. I mean, I don't have the history in front of me, but I'd venture to say. I think Marvel and DC have done everything, every property at some point or another. But as we know, CBS All Access has Star Trek Discovery going, which Ryan tells me we've discussed the fact that it's gotten a season 3 pickup.
I swear we have.
I don't remember this, but in case we didn't.
You can bring it up right now if you want to talk about it.
It has been renewed for season 3. But one of the cool things, in addition to that show, which is doing well, they've announced a spinoff bringing back Jean-Luc Picard, a.k.a. Professor Xavier, also known as Patrick Stewart. They're bringing him back in his own series. That's also going to be on Star Trek Discovery. And it's going to pick Star Trek Discovery. CBS All Access. And it's going to show what he's been up to all these years post The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And so all we knew really was that it was going to feature a older Picard, a very different Picard, and Patrick Stewart. But now we know that he's got cast members along with him, which makes sense because he can't do the show. I mean, I guess he could do the show alone. Imagine it was just him on the ship, kind of like Tom Hanks with the Wilson ball from Castaway.
A one-man Picard show. That'd be fun.
They could do that, but they're not going to. He's going to have cast members. One of which is Santiago Cabrera, and the other one is Michelle Hurd. Santiago Cabrera most recently starred in 2 seasons in the CBS thriller Salvation. But before that, you would recognize him from Heroes. He was the artist Isaac Mendez.
Mm-hmm. The man who could paint to the future.
Well, hi, which is very important. For the recreational drugs. But since Brian likes to bring up DC, here's a chance where we can, because it makes sense, in the sense that he was almost Aquaman he was cast in George Miller's Justice League Mortal.
In the same way that Armie Hammer was so very close to being Batman before now, but you know, well.
And we discussed what might be happening now last week. That much I remember. But
this is actually Justice League Mortal news I hadn't known about. I knew about, obviously, Armie Hammer. I had... I'm drawing a blank on the name of the guy who was going to be the Flash.
Oh, the guy from the OC. Adam Brody.
Adam Brody.
See, they were smart. They got a guy named Adam. They should have been this, you know. They blew it.
I think it's the actor's name is what? DJ Catrona, maybe? Was cast as Superman.
Yep.
And one of... oh my goodness! I'm drawing a blank on the bad guy from Fury Road, with the mask. One of his quote unquote wives had been cast as, you know, Wonder Woman.
Oh, Megan Gale, the Australian model turned out. Mm-hmm. Notice that's the one I remember.
I wonder why.
She's probably one of my multiverse wives. I haven't gone that far, but I'd venture to guess that she's there.
In the universe where she did become Wonder Woman.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good call. Thanks for contributing to the backstory of one of my monsters. That's very impressive.
Seriously.
Seriously,
we have got to turn this into a comic book so that in a couple of years we can have our own Crisis on Infinite Earths scenario, and all your
wives and girlfriends.
Yeah, they can appear on the podcast. And we can have a council of Adam's wives. I don't know how good that's. I mean, that would be an expensive show to produce. Considering it'd probably not all come on here for free. But, you know, a good idea.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, so Santiago Cabrera. And he's going to be the. From what I understand, he's going to pilot the ship that Picard is. Because I'm assuming Picard is now a higher ranking officer than captain. So he's going to be probably bossing Santiago Cabrera around. And
I thought the premise of the show was like he had retired from Starfleet or something.
Yeah, but probably, you know how they keep their title. Probably he's an admiral or something now.
Okay.
I mean, listen, it's Patrick Stewart, Professor X, you know.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Look, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care what they do. He's in it, I'm watching it.
Uh-huh.
He's in it, it's tied to Star Trek. Where do I sign?
Well, if it's Patrick Stewart, where do I sign?
Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, and then Michelle Hurd, as I said. No relation to Amber Heard.
I was going to ask in
relation. It's actually spelled different. And it's not. She's not related to Gail Ann Hurd either, the producer of the X-Men franchise. But she was recently in the Lethal Weapon TV show. And I don't know much about her. But she's in there too. And we're not really clear on what her role is. They haven't really announced that. So, but yeah, it's good to see that is... gaining momentum. I'm going to start filming soon and I will be watching it, and there goes another hour of my life away, but I'm okay with that. And that's the news, so we can now get into our shows. How about that? All right, so let's start with I don't know which one we usually start with, but regardless, I'm going to start with Project Blue Book this week. How about that?
That's fine,
because it's our show, we can do whatever the hell we want.
Exactly. Well, some of us can do whatever they want, but, you know, one person wants to talk about a DC comic for a few minutes and they get bitched at. Wait, fine.
I allowed it. Listen. Don't get yourself on another list. And it won't be the good one. Don't make me put you on the naughty list.
From the first kiss to the last.
Oh, stop that. Now you're really going to get fired.
Hey, I'm only talking
next
about...
Week,
I'm
week,
not. I'm talking
our
about...
Captain Marvel review, our international correspondent will be filling in as temporary co-host of the show.
Well, that's fine. Then I'll go over to his show and I'll be temporary co-host with his brother.
Oh, no, me and his brother have not had trade talks. There's going to be draft picks involved. It's a whole thing. You know, maybe
there's going to be a whole international kerfuffle between America, Canada, and the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I have to get one of the stars of in the British stars to be one of my international multiverse wives, and then maybe we'll work out a deal. But until then, there's no such deal in place. So why don't you, in the meantime, tell us what the heck Project Blue Book was about?
Well, this week's Project Blue Book was about a former military man and his wife coming to visit Hynek and Quinn and to try and tell them his story of a possible abduction.
Yes.
And it doesn't go very well because it ends up in a hostage situation, which that escalated quickly. As far as this specific series of events, I cannot think of as it was portrayed on TV, there was no case that fit perfectly with what happened, but there were a lot of similarities between this week's, you know, abduction, or if you want to call it a case of the week sort of thing, between this and the infamous Betty and Barney Hill abduction.
Okay.
That's to the fact that it was, you know, a black man abducted, whereas in the Betty and Barney Hill, it was a black man and his white wife. So it was an interracial couple.
Anyway,
Betty and Barney Hill incident is, you know, commonly referred to as, you know, the first widely publicized abduction case.
Oh, wow. So there is some basis.
There is a little bit, yes.
They took liberties.
Yes, just like how they've been doing with a lot of cases. Sometimes more so than others, but, you know, they are taking cases from the real world and having a little bit of creative fun with them. And that's fine. That's fine.
Right, I agree. I agree.
And also down to the point where, like I said, you know, the common similarities were, you know, African American male being involved, and also a star map being written and drawn by someone who should have no knowledge of anything remotely, you know, close to that level of information.
I gotta say, Ryan, I really like this episode.
It was intense.
But also the fact that, like, now we're getting into an abduction case, which is something we haven't really been, like, so far it's been sightings.
Yeah.
Of different things, of different kinds. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting into abductions. And I think that's really, really, really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the abduction phenomenon really didn't start until, you know, the mid to late 50s.
Right.
Like I said, Betty and Barney Hill was kind of the first. I mean, obviously, I believe that it had been going on before then, but widely put out there in the press and news and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. And you know what? To kind of, if you think about this man's situation where he tried contacting before, he went through legal channels and all that, and he basically got to run around, he got told, you know, in lack of a better term, get lost.
Yeah.
By Quinn.
Quinn. Yeah.
Harley Quinn's brother. uncle, I should say, given the time difference. But, yeah.
A multiverse Batman, because I thought we agreed that Hynek was a multiverse Jim Gordon.
Yeah, with the French Jim Gordon. Yeah. See, now I'm breaking my own rule.
It always comes back to DC.
Given that rebuking that he took, like, it's, I mean, you can understand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not condoning what he did.
No.
But you can certainly understand. Yeah. Like being pushed to the limit of, look, nobody believes me. They think I'm nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta get my story told, and I gotta find the truth. You can totally
understand that, and he's not. There isn't much for him to gain out of this except just having someone that high up in the government hear his story without being told that he's F nuts crazy. Which is what he's been going through for, you know, quite a while.
And I like the fact that we got, like, little bits of, because Hynek hypnotizes him, right? Or
And that's another carryover from the Betty and Barney Hill case where they didn't, you know, they didn't recall, I should say consciously, they did not recall a whole lot. But it was when put under hypnosis, you know, both of them, that's when they talk about being inside the ship
And that's where I get intrigued, because consciously I can see how you lie about something, but how do you lie subconsciously?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I really like the little bit, like the little glimpses we saw of his hypnosis
It was a very interesting, I would say almost like, you know, I hate to use this kind of pompous phrase, but art house way of depicting an alien abduction.
Yeah.
But there was usually, yeah, go on.
There was something to it because there was something in his neck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but in most movies and TV shows, you know, they kind of present it as, you know, you can see the walls of the spaceship or you're laying on the table and something. But in this one, it almost felt like he was floating in some kind of gas or liquid or something.
Right. Right. But
then like your typical, stereotypical, you know, archetype alien abduction.
Yeah. Right. But what did you make of what was in his neck? Like, what do you think? What do you think was going on there?
Oh God! Based on my knowledge of all this kind of stuff, it's some kind of tracking device.
Yeah,
I would think. Probe kind of has, you know, connotations to it. Wasn't anal probe. But some kind of tracking device, some type of device that kind of would have transmitted.
Yeah, and it did some
biological data back to wherever.
To the mothership. Let's go.
Uh huh. Sure.
But that thing was doing some freaky stuff at the.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the episode too. So. Now we have two physical, tangible pieces in play with a it's called a tracking device, and the mysterious key that's still all on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So that was intriguing to me. Now we have another, mm-hmm. The physical evidence is starting to mount.
And I do like, if I'm recalling this correctly, I think this is the first episode where Hynek actually we do verbally get the close encounter scale.
Yeah.
That Hynek talks about.
Yeah, that's right.
And that Hynek invented, you know, this scale for close encounters. Close encounter of the first kind is pretty much just a visual sighting of a UFO and decently, you know, close enough distance. Close encounter of the second kind is some kind of physical evidence left behind, like burn marks in the grass or, you know, it malfunctions with electro equipment. Close encounter of the third kind is actually physically seeing, maybe not interacting, but seeing extraterrestrial life. There was no official fourth kind, close encounter of the fourth kind. There kind of is an unofficial one. Hynek wasn't involved with it, though. Fourth kind would have been, you know, from what I, you know, have gathered from my own research, you know, fourth kind is kind of used to refer to abduction scenarios.
Okay.
But again, that's, you know, Hynek only officially, you know, I do with air quotes, officially came up with all first through third kind.
Okay.
And actually, it was because of the scale, you know, that, you know, inspired Spielberg to do his Close Encounters of the Third Kind movie. And one of my favorite little bits of trivia is the real Hynek himself has a cameo in that movie. At the end when the mothership shows up at a Devil's Tower.
And is he actually playing himself?
I don't know. He doesn't have any speaking lines, but he is kind of seen, like kind of stepping out of like a group of scientists, and as you know, the mothership lowers itself.
Oh, I gotta go back and check for this now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because as I was watching, I'm like, man, I want to go watch Close Encounters again.
I know, because I would say it's probably up there with Jaws as.
Oh, it's one of the best sci-fi. It's one of the best sci-fi movies.
Mm-hmm. Not just one of Spielberg's best, but yeah, of all sci-fi, it's
Which at some point is a review we could do down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just like adding things to the list on the show.
Are we actually going to ever cover this stuff? We don't know. We'll see when we get there.
Unless Ryan quits on me, but, you know. if Warner Brothers can replace Will Smith, I would never replace
him. He's going to get, Adam, you're going to have to find another overweight, pasty, gay white boy to take my place.
All right, I'm putting the ad on Kickstarter. Looking for, not Kickstarter, Kijiji.
We just need a backup. Looking for, we just need someone to sit on the bench just in case.
No, Ryan's going to be here until he's old and gray. And we're still waiting for Man of Steel 2. But
I just celebrated my 80th birthday. I can't wait for Man of Steel 1.5.
We're going to be in cryogenic freezing doing the show. Once a week, they're going to bring us out to record an episode. And then put us back in.
No, I'm going to be asked to put in a cryogenic sleep, and I'll be like, do not wake me up unless Man of Steel 2 is coming out this weekend.
And then we'll have somebody wake us up. Is it out? Yeah, record this and then.
Okay, put me back.
So that's the plan. Long range forecast. But that was intriguing to me. All that, like, the, again, like you mentioned, the close encounter scale, and also another physical element. Lends credence to the idea that we're not alone and there's some freaky stuff happening. But speaking of freaky stuff, Mimi Hynek's Russian friend got a little freaky.
If it finally happened this time. Drug induced and against consent, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Say so, but I mean, we've been tracking we should have had an award on the show. We could still do it. But it's on another podcast I listen to. Has the sexual attention award, and every week they give a mention to the pairing with the most sexual attention, and we speculated on that with Mimi and. What is her name?
Susie. The Russian, yes.
Like for what? I think we called that out in the second or third episode.
Yeah.
And here she is.
I'm just kind of surprised that they actually did something with it.
Yeah. So that was
granted, I thought that when they finally would get to this moment, it would have been a little bit more consensual.
Yeah, it would have been nice if she'd been awake.
But Mimi loves her husband, so it's kind of, I feel conflicted about Susie as a character. You know, she does this to try and, she goes through all this to try and, still learn more info about what Hynek's up to. But then, she goes to meet up with her Russian contact, aka the husband, and killed him. Finally.
Yeah, but so hold on a second. Here's my thing. So she takes pictures of presumably her and Susie together, right?
Probably blackmail.
So then if she was going to go along with blackmailing Hynek and his wife, why then kill her quote-unquote husband? Like, what?
Because he's
a violent bastard, but...
He's a bastard. He killed someone who did not need to be killed. The neighbor was a bitch, but does that mean that they had to die? No. He was violent.
I totally understood for her it, and I totally cheered when she did it.
I was very happy because I love that moment when she maneuvers his hands onto her throat, leans in for a kiss, and then she just whispers, "Now I can do it." Now it's like what? Like
oh,
now
his hands on her throat.
You didn't see that?
Oh no! I thought his hands were somewhere else.
No. She like takes his one hand and puts it around her throat, so a little tightly, because she knows that he likes it rough. She takes the other hand. She takes the other hand, does the same thing, leans in to kiss him, and then that's when she goes, "Now,
now I can do it in self-defense, or like now it'll be self-defense. And yeah, that's yeah, when yeah. she fires off a couple
She's
of bullets.
She's very smart and forward-thinking that way.
Uh-huh. I mean, just like how, you know, she knew how she wanted to go in and see Mimi that night. So that's why she asked him to hit her so that she would look bruised and
I think if she knew she was going to do that, I think mm-hmm. part of her just wanted to have sex with Mimi, if you ask me.
I do, yeah. I'm so up in the air as to what.
I'm not condoning what she did, mm-hmm. but I'm just saying there's part of her that actually wanted to do that with Mimi.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I just feel conflicted about her as a character. She finally killed that abusive prick. But on the other hand, she let's call it for what it is. She, you know, what would you say? Like outright rape or date rape or something? Mimi?
I mean, the thing is, the question becomes, did she go all the way? Or was it just a setup to take the pictures, and then that's what we don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very hard. I kept thinking of this. I'm like, this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But man, if she was awake and it was consensual, and on HBO, this would be so cool. No, but
it'd be a lot more graphic. You know that.
Yeah, HBO. You know, cool.
Yeah.
Watchmen. Who knows what they're gonna do? But no, like I said, I don't know if it was, if you, again, like I don't know if, the way she went about it was wrong in drugging her and whatnot. But I'm still hesitant to say that she went all the way with her. I think it was just more the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like, what is the?
We'll never know, but as of right now, we don't know the extent.
Well, she's probably going to use it to blackmail. It's like, you know, help me get info on your husband, or I'm going to send him, you know, these.
Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see. But either way, it was terrible the way she went about it.
Yes.
But seeing her kill her disgusting husband.
That, yeah.
Or fake
Regardless of all her other actions in the episode,
that was a good moment.
Uh-huh. I smiled. He had it coming.
Definitely. So, you know, next week is the finale.
Mm-hmm. Can't believe it. It's already been.
So, before we get to next week, though, you have to rate this episode. So, unless there's something else you want to mention.
The only other thing that honestly stands out to me is I really, really like the editing of when they kept cutting back between all three situations, between the wife doing, you know, taking a pair of scissors and cutting out the probe in the soldier's neck, Quinn and Hynek actually, you know, like having, like, you know, wrestling and having a fist fight in the office.
Yes.
And Mimi and Susie, you know, drunk and drug induced, you know, making out. Yeah. There was just something I really liked about, you know, just kind of the rapid cuts.
Oh, yeah, it was filmed very, very effectively. Very,
mm-hmm, yeah.
Very well filmed, all choreographed. I mean,
incredibly well for me to like want to point it out. So I guess I'll give this episode a B+. It keeps, you know, I think that I'm just gonna I've been saying this probably almost every week. Yes, there are cases of the week and monsters of the week, you know, sometimes, but never have they felt like outright filler episodes. Every episode, no matter what the quote-unquote monster or case of the week is, keeps continually building upon itself. know, and they only had 10 episodes, so they knew they couldn't afford to do anything really, you know, filler.
Well, there's no filler here, yeah, at all.
And also, I'm just even more intrigued as to who the man in black is, because, you know, he's telling he hands Hynek the plane ticket to Washington. He's like, what you've been waiting for since you joined this project is going to happen soon. And without even seeing, like, I knew what next week episode is going to be about, or what real world incident they're going to be taking inspiration from. And so just knowing that the man in black is aware that there's going to be something happening in the skies above Washington, D.C., it's like, who is he? I'm legit wondering, are they going to try and tell us that the man in black is one of them, if you get what I mean?
Ooh, that's a cool idea.
Because I do generally believe we are not alone and that we've been visited and all that stuff. And not all aliens are small little grays with big heads and big eyes.
No, some of them are shape-shifting mutant men, like
the Skrulls. Yeah. There are, you know, more reptilian ones. And then there are some who look just like us.
And I'm legit wondering if the man in black, you know, is one of these.
Now, here's a question for you. That's a good theory, but was there a man in black in any of Hynek's journals?
Not honestly, not that I'm all that aware of at the moment. No,
I mean,
this show does take a lot of creative liberties.
Are all his journals and findings published?
I know that Project Blue Book itself is published, obviously, because that's where they say 95 to like 98% of all cases.
But is it? Is there a book? Because I want to get this book and read it.
That's what I'm going to look up right now, Jan. Because I, off the top of my head, I'm not aware of anything.
It'd be fascinating to read some of this stuff, you know. As we,
I mean, I know that he's had like, you know, papers and essays, but a book, I'm not entirely sure.
All right. Well, either way, your point is very interesting. I'm intrigued, but all right. With that said, so B+ is your rating. I'm going to go, you know what, I'll go a little bit higher, A-. Because, you're right, it wasn't the typical case that we had in previous weeks. Not that all cases were the same, but they followed a similar path.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this was very different. And the hostage situation really intensified things, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked this episode.
But before we move on to Roswell, I am looking up, and he actually does have, I wouldn't say they are his journals, but he has written or co-written a couple of books.
Well, good.
The UFO Experience in 1972, The Edge of Reality in 1975, The Hynek UFO Report in 1977, and Night Siege, the Hudson Valley UFO sightings in 1987.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I will be looking those up.
I'm using the Wikipedia to look up this stuff, and just finding out that his one of his sons is a apparently an Oscar-winning visual effects supervisor. Worked on the camouflage effects of the Predator in the first movie.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting.
So, still working with aliens, but not... not in the same way his father did, yeah.
Exactly. Just a smidge.
Sort of keeping it in the family. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, cool. That's cool. So yeah, mm-hmm. A minus is my rating. B plus is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're on the same page pretty much. So let's transition to semi-real cases to completely fictional cases with Roswell, New Mexico.
Okay, this, you know, following on the aftermath of all the big revelations from last week's episode, that Isabelle is, you know, responsible for the deaths of Rosa and two other teenage girls 10 years ago. You know, this episode, you know, really does focus on, you know, Max and Michael and even to an extent Liz, you know, how they're going to try and deal with Isabelle. Because, you know, they're aware that, like, when, conscious, she's fine. But if, she, you know, since she's starting to have the blackouts again, they don't know what can happen, you know, how dangerous she can be, who else she can hurt. Very sad and emotional subplot to this week's episode was Maria's mom coming back into the picture and, you know, coming off as very forgetful and not knowing who people are, what year it is. Yet, you know, Maria tells us that, you know, she's taken her mom to see, you know, all these doctors and everything, and they're not saying that it's, you know, this disease or like Alzheimer's or anything like that. But yet, Maria's mom is experiencing all these symptoms.
Right.
And they don't really have a, you know, dry and, you know, clean cut explanation.
It's funny because when that was happening, and when she said that her mother had been to the doctors and the doctor said there's nothing wrong with her or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking of the guy from, you know, the show Ancient Aliens? the Greek dude? I kept thinking to myself, with the hair.
Aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
With the hair. Not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens. Aliens. Pyramids, aliens.
Yeah. So I kept having that, you know, thought in my head. But no, that was very, very emotional, and seeing her call Liz.
She mistakes Liz for Rosa.
It was heartbreaking to see through Liz's eyes. I'm glad that it
brought back memories of, to bring it back to Marvel, brought back memories of Steve visiting Peggy in Winter Soldier, you know, them having a conversation, then he turns away to go grab something, and he comes back, and she's like, oh, Steve, you're finally back. It's just, oh, God, broke down in tears.
Yeah, no, that was tough to watch, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely felt the emotional weight of that. But, you know, also how Rosa started using that to get some information about, more about that night, right?
Yeah, and that obviously Rosa come to Maria's mom to talk about Isabelle. Right. So, and, you know, Maria's mom makes mention of, I mean, you don't know if you can completely trust what she's saying, but I kind of just want to lean towards I trust her on this. You know, Maria's mom does say that, you know, Isabelle had told Rosa a secret that scared the shit out of Rosa. Yeah. And I bet you, I would be willing to bet that it was that Isabelle, when she had a blackout in high school, confessed to Rosa about her extraterrestrial heritage, or probably at the bare minimum demonstrated her abilities to her.
Yeah, I could see that. And you know what, I understand Liz's inclination and decision to create a serum that could sort of neutralize. Neutralize Sam and sorry, Sam, Max and
Michael and Isabel and their abilities. Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt very.
Like, I understood her logic.
Yeah.
Like, it was very,
you know, as a deterrent and whatnot, kind of, it weirdly kind of felt a little, not saying Liz is Lex Luthor and she created Kryptonite, but I just kind of got that vibe from it, you know, that she's saying, oh, I have this deterrent that I can,
well,
you know,
if Lex actually meant that, it'd be the case, that
it. Yeah.
But that's not Lex, but, you know, I mean, at least not the Lex defeats Jolly Ranchers. I don't know. Anyway.
you don't want your Lex Luthor just sticking their finger in other people's mouth?
What are you saying? Well, no, definitely not. That was a little strange. But, no, so I understood Liz's decision there. And also, like, even you see Max and Michael come to the realization that, yeah, this is something that needs to happen. We can't control her. We don't know what's going on. We have to keep her locked up, you know, in not Arkham Asylum. But that's what I was thinking.
and I do like, you know, the growth that Liz goes through in this episode, that she was willing, you know, she was terrified of Isabel and what she did to Rosa and what she could possibly do again now that she's experiencing blackouts again for the first time in 10 years. And that's why Liz is created this serum, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But she was willing to destroy it and get rid of it. But I'm willing to bet you this is a Chekhov's gun situation. Because Max does tell her to hold on to it so that in case anything happens with any of them, with, you know, Isabel or Max or Michael, that she has a way to protect herself if they can't. Yeah. So it's like, I can already kind of see the writing, you know, that this is, like I said, a Chekhov's gun situation, that this serum is probably going to come back into play at some point before the season is over.
I would agree with you there.
Whether or not she uses it on Isabel, I don't know. But the fact that she has something that can toxic to aliens.
But it also, there's more, like, there's growth with Max as well, because he's realizing that, okay, Michael and I cannot protect her on our own. Because we don't know what's going on.
Yeah. And Isabel is aware of all this going on. I do like that for the first couple episodes of this, of, you know, the reboot, Isabel kind of came off as bitchy.
Yeah.
Real super bitchy.
Yeah, I
agree. But, you know, now that she knows what's happened, she, you know, I knew nothing was going to come of it because emotions were still raw and painful. But I do give credit to Isabel that she wanted to go to Liz and try to talk it out. Yeah. She knew that a simple apology was not going to cut it, but she wanted to try and talk to Liz. And it's like, I understand why Isabel wanted to do that. I also understand why Liz, you know, wanted to get...
Ryan, you cut off.
All right. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
You cut off there. What'd you say? It's repeated?
I do appreciate that, you know, Isabel tried to go and talk things out with Liz.
Yeah.
But also I can we can all understand why Liz wanted to just push Isabel away and get as far away from her as possible.
Yeah, and also, like you said, Isabel has shown a lot of character growth as well.
Yeah.
I agree with you in that sense. Is there anything else you want to call attention to?
Well, there's the fact that what is she, a deputy or the other cop that Max has a fling with? That bitch has.
Yeah, no, I'll watch it now.
That hoe. Fine.
That's even better.
Even better for this family friendly show. You know, as Cameron, I think is the character's name, has teamed up with Alex's dad to spy, and she's aware that Max is not telling the truth.
Okay, so
about the symbols.
Okay, so regarding, I'm glad you brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding the symbols and the tattoo that Max has.
Which he tries to pass off.
He says he doesn't know what it means.
That was just a doodle or something. And yet she knows he's lying because kind of, you know, the redneck racist who shot the conspiracy guy a couple episodes ago and almost killed Liz. He, while talking to Cameron at the hospital, you know, kind of subconsciously starts drawing, you know, the exact same symbol.
Yeah, no, so we're all in agreement that Max knows what that symbol is, right?
Oh.
I don't think...
Because there was not the same symbol, but the original show also had, like, a symbol that meant something. It's just that when the show started, Max Michael Isabel did not know what it meant. And because I do remember there was a scene in the original show where Max's mom is watching old home videos of when they were little kids. And she has a video of Max drawing an alien symbol, you know,
right,
in the sand on the beach. And he had no idea what it was, almost like it was like genetically imprinted into his memory or something. So I think they're going for something similar here where he probably does know that this symbol is alien in nature. What it means, I don't think any of them know. Not yet, at least.
Good point. Good call.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might be right there. But yeah, so is that it, or is it?
I can't think of anything. Can you?
Right. No, I'm good. We covered it all. All I'll say is CW, anytime you want to renew this show, we're more than willing to report on it. So
I know that I'll
you cut out again.
Please. Pretty please.
Agreed.
I'm not asking for much here.
Same. Yeah. But all right, let's give it a rating. What did you think of this week's episode?
I would give this a I would probably give it a solid B. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious to see how, because, you know, the episode ends with Isabel voluntarily going to kind of like a rehab center in a way, just someplace comfortable that she can kind of, in a weird way, get locked up in, just in case. But I think it's pretty obvious that she's going to have a blackout while there. And I just wonder what the hell is going to happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then I'll give it a B+.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed this episode. I think it was, if anything, there was a, you know, I'm used to that, like another big reveal or a big set piece in all the other previous episodes, and none of that was really here this time around. So that's why it doesn't get the A for me, but it's a solid B+, and I'm still loving every minute of this show.
Yep, so. Likewise.
So get on that renewal, but until then, that brings this podcast to a close. Ryan, if people want to talk to you about Roswell, about Project Blue Book, about, you know, all the DC stuff that you want to talk about here, but maybe you should refrain.
Nope, not going to refrain.
Captain nice Marvel. Try. Nice try. If they all want to talk to you about any of that stuff, where do they do that?
If you want to bitch at me because I said that the New 52 was better than Rebirth, you can find me on Twitter at The Amazing Rye Guy.
Awesome. And if you want to talk to me and read my sure-to-be controversial tweets about where Captain Marvel ranks amongst Marvel Origin films ahead of our podcast next week, you can do that at Superhero Sci-Fi. Be warned, if you want to share your origin ranking and it's different than mine, but want to do so respectfully and just say, hey, your opinion is different than mine, but that's cool, then do that there. If you're going to come at me and say ridiculous, stupid things, then you might be blocked. But if you want to take a chance, either way, at Superhero Sci-Fi is the place to follow me and interact with me. But that's it for this week. We hope you enjoyed listening to the episode. We enjoyed recording it. Whether you're listening to this during the week or on a weekend, we hope you have a good one, a safe one, and an enjoyable listen. Until next time, so long, and live long and prosper.
Take care, folks.